This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Since the 2016 presidential election, the concept of fake news has continued to grow, fueled by partisan politics and an uptick of false information perpetuated through social media. But how does skepticism and all-out distrust of news media organizations affect local communities? That's a focus of a recent event at the University of Wisconsin-La Crosse, sponsored by the nonpartisan nonprofit Leader Ethics Wisconsin. Joining us to talk about these issues and why they're important for the La Crosse area are Kathleen Bartson-Culver, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison and a recent speaker at UWL, Lee Roche, executive director of Leader Ethics Wisconsin, and Sam Shinta, UWL political science lecturer and president of IM Education, a local education nonprofit focused on critical thinking. Kathleen, your talk at UWL is called Trust, Truth, and the Future of Journalism Ethics. So I wonder if you can just start by sharing with us a little bit about what you're talking about here at UWL.
Well, I think you've touched on some of the important ideas, this concept of fake news, which there was a time where I threatened to fine my students a dollar every time they used that imprecise term. But also what it means when we as a civil society don't have a common set of information that we can rely on in making decisions, when we're challenging and tearing down sources of information, how can we actually govern ourselves and take care of the things that a community needs to take care of, like health and safety and you know, the idea that we come together in the civic sphere, but we don't have information we can rely on together is a real challenge right now.
I wonder if you could speak more about, you know, why this message feels maybe particularly important to have right now.
Well, I think we have declining trust in news, so that's why it's particularly important at this moment. But we have declining trust in other institutions as well, and I think they're connected. When you have increasing polarization and attacks based on that polarization, it can cause people to lose trust across the board. And I think that makes it very hard for us to find that common good and work toward it together.
Lee, why was this a conversation that Leader Ethics Wisconsin wanted to have here in the La Crosse area?
Okay. Ethical leaders are in place in many elected officials. But one of the challenges we have right now is that the polarization that Kathleen was talking about is really a major factor in making it a real challenge to be an ethical leader. And it's because we are a divided nation. This isn't the first time we've been a divided nation. Obviously, in the Vietnam War era, we were a divided nation, and we had a civil war 100 years prior to that. But in many ways, at this time, we are a nation that's divided by design. There are strategies by the political parties, by think tanks, and even other countries that are causing this divide. And unless we as citizens can recognize and process factual information, correct information from that's designed to be misleading, it'll be very challenging for us to have ethical leadership.
What are you hoping the community kind of walks away with from this conversation around kind of the future of journalism ethics? Kind of what do you kind of hope are the next steps out of this conversation?
One of the biggest challenges we have to overcome is our own pessimism. When we have a decline in trust in our major institutions, we can become pessimistic. And then once we reach that state, it's very difficult to overcome, no matter how much quality and accuracy is in place. If we're coming in from a pessimistic view, we're not going to trust that. And so in order for us to trust ethical leadership in the political arena, we have to believe that it can and should happen. Now think about it. We have servant leadership programs that develop ethical leaders, people with character in business and healthcare and education and every other sector except the political arena. And so for us to accomplish that in that area, we have to help overcome some of that pessimism. And in some cases here, we have to help citizens to recognize good information and helpful information that's coming through journalism from the false information that is designed to mislead us.
Sam, you know, we've been talking about how this this conversation, you know, in a lot of ways relates to politics, especially partisan politics. But I wonder if you could talk about how this conversation maybe fits into thinking about education in our community and how this conversation about, you know, being able to have reliable news and discern fact from false information kind of fits into education.
As citizens in a republic, which we are, of course, one of the imperatives for being a citizen in a republic is you have to be able to access good information so that you can make choices, you can make good decisions. If we do not have news sources that we feel are honest or reliable, or that there seems to be some sort of gap there, it's going to harm that reliability and that access to information, which we then need for critical thinking, obviously. And so when we look at education, I work with high schoolers all the time that are working on a variety of research papers. And, you know, today, in today's world, you just throw in a search term, you pull up all sorts of stuff on the internet, and the internet values everything the same way. Right? So when you pull up a search a list, everything looks like it is equally valid. If we don't teach students how to parse through information, to understand what sources are reliable, what sources are not reliable, if we're not giving them those critical thinking skills and research techniques to be able to discern that, well, then the output that they're going to produce in terms of papers is not going to be very good. And I've seen that happen as well with lots of students, where they will build their papers on false assumptions, information that they've pulled out, oftentimes from so-called reputable news sources, and it's garbage in, garbage out, which is problematic. So it's not only that we're seeing this impact the quality of what students are using for research in that educational forum, but if we're setting them up to be good critical thinkers in our society, which again, we need as a requirement for citizens, well, we've missed something there as well.
Have we seen local schools start to look at this issue and invest in this issue?
With my nonprofit, I've been fortunate enough to work at a variety of schools, and one of the things that we do with working within the high schools is working with them on research methods. And so, yes, I've seen that happen on the front lines. I've seen the role of the librarian really rise up in all of this because, as I point out to many students, it's like you've got a person down the hall who is trained in helping to identify those quality sources. So go utilize that person. And some schools are taking that very seriously. So I've seen schools that have actually started building in research methods into some of their processes. Onalaska High School, for example, I know now has several classes where they build in that research process before students are even writing or worrying about their paper. It's how do you research? How do you value different sources? How do you determine if a source is good or not? Bangor School District has a librarian there who's fantastic, who has developed a whole checklist for students on how to tell if this is a good news source or not, how to tell if it's so-called fake news or good quality news to rely upon. So yeah, we are seeing some school districts tack into this, which is terrific.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the rise of fake news and how it's affecting local communities. We're here with Sam Shinta from I Am Education, a local education nonprofit focused on critical thinking, Lee Roche from Leader Ethics Wisconsin, and Kathleen Bartson-Culver from the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. So Kathleen, you know, I wonder if you could talk about how we know there is a declining trust in news organizations. You know, what kind of data do we have to maybe support that?
So we know through a number of different surveys and other qualitative research as well. And one of the things that I think a lot of people miss is that the trust in news is declining overall, but it's very much segmented by partisan belief. So liberals tend to trust the news media in general more, and conservatives, people who vote Republican, tend to trust it less. And that, I think, to get back to Lee's earlier point, when we're talking about partisanship and leadership in public life, one of the things that was really disconcerting to me is that everything is pitched as a partisan battle. And, even what seems like the tiniest policy issue, it's like, what does the left think versus what does the right think? And that's not a way, that may be a way to win elections, but it's not a way to govern. And so when you see this partisanship reflected in trust in news, that again doubles down on this concern for me, that we're saying even your news outlet now has come to be part of this pitched partisan battle. And that's something that is not only scary, but also not sustainable. I mean, we have incredibly weighty problems to solve in this society. And if we're not working toward solving them in common, where are we headed?
How are news organizations maybe responsible for some of the partisanship that we see in politics? You know, is there kind of a responsibility there for providing that platform?
Yeah, that's an absolutely excellent question. And there are some ways that I think news organizations really need to be much more self-reflective. They need to be thinking about what they do. One of the ways I think a lot of news organizations shoot themselves in the foot when it comes to trust and when it comes to contributing to their communities is that they don't talk about what they do and why they do it. You don't see news organizations serving up why we made the choices we made in today's, you know, La Crosse Tribune, for instance. People want to know. They shouldn't see their news organizations as a black box. Local television news has the highest trust ratings of all types of news organizations, and you do see some of that in television news. You see this sort of personal relationship with an anchor or reporter who sometimes will preface a story talking about, this is a very difficult, sensitive subject, and here's why we did it. I also think, you know, anyone who has been through journalism school or read a journalism textbook has learned that conflict is a news value that plays, that audiences will care more about a story when there's conflict. And that's easy to see in sort of a Democrats versus Republicans in the state legislature, but also kind of man versus disease in a healthcare story. And the extent to which we promote that conflict narrative in news, we frame things in those conflict terms, just contributes to the idea that we are in this battle, that we are opposing sides fighting each other. And I think that's really, really problematic.
Yeah, Lee, I wonder what your thoughts are on, you know, how the news media maybe feeds into this idea of constant conflict.
Well, it's a challenge because is a circle that's going on here. And as the candidates come forward and they contribute to the controversy, and then we cover that, and then that adds to the story being the coverage of that and the reaction to that. It just keeps feeding, and it's a challenge. And it's also understood too that the research indicate that one of the primary motivators or strongest motivators for getting people to vote or not vote is anger. And so when there are partisan interests are trying to push that button over and over again, and then we cover that, it gets very, very murky. And so we have to really help the average citizen to understand when that's happening and embrace it. This is information that's coming here, but I also need to look or think about the perspectives, other perspectives that might be out there, so that we're not getting sucked up into that vortex. The Internet Research Agency based in St. Petersburg, Russia, was notorious for its phony Facebook pages, and they did testimony at the United States Senate, and the top 10 or so phony Facebook pages had $39 million likes. But here was the real trouble. There were 31 million shares. And so people are getting information, but they're not processing it. They're just pushing it on and contributing to others getting caught up in this as well. So we have to help people understand that if nothing else, don't hit the share button until you're sure you know this is, you know, factual information that you're promoting.
Yeah, Kathleen.
Yeah. Can I just say I am tremendously empathetic toward the average citizen out there trying to figure out what is real or what is not real. You know, during the 2016 general election campaign, a dear person in my life shared that the Pope had endorsed Donald Trump, which was not true, and very bright person, very highly educated person. And I thought, why would this happen? And I went and I looked at it, and these are very, very savvy efforts to use the forms of journalism without the norms of journalism. Mm-hmm. And they're playing to fear, which you're right, is an incredibly powerful motivator. But after that IRA testimony in Congress, the New York Times showed, they had a quiz, I think it was five pairings of an actual Facebook post from a real advocacy group and one that had been generated by this Russian campaign. And it was a little quiz, figure out which one was real and which one was fake. I study this for a living, and I only got 2 out of 5 right. It is a tough time to be a citizen in this country. very tough time.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Sam, what are your thoughts on how social media has kind of changed the game in a lot of ways?
Yeah, when I talk with students, whether it's at the high school or the university, I explain to them that the fundamentally the biggest change that has happened in my lifetime has been our technological transformation and how it's impacted how we get information as a result. When I grew up, and I think this is true of everyone in the room here, we had three news networks. You had a daily newspaper. If you were lucky, you maybe had two. Talk radio in the 1970s was virtually non-existent. You listened to AM for sports, FM for music. There wasn't an internet, or I mean, or at least a consumer available internet. And in 30 plus years, this whole thing has shifted completely. 24/7 news networks, social media, technology, talk radio. And so, you know, there's a huge upside to this in that the availability of information today is better than it ever has been in history. You carry the equivalent of a library in your pocket all the time, and you can look something up. The challenge, of course, is that if you don't know how to use that information, if you can't parse what is good information versus bad information, well, then that's going to be a struggle. And so, as Kathleen points out very, very aptly, the sophistication now of stuff that isn't good quality information but looks a lot like good quality information makes it incredibly difficult for people. And especially when we talk about younger people who are tending to get their news information from all online, oftentimes social media. I regularly poll my students every semester and just ask them where they get their news. I think in the last 5 years, I've had maybe five that get it from a printed newspaper source. And everyone is either going to cable news, they're going to social media, some of them do talk radio. And as we know, these are also highly siloed areas of news, so you can find the news that you really want to reinforce your own opinion. So it's just this really complex world that I agree. It makes it very, very difficult to be a news consumer in the 21st century.
Lee, I wonder also what your thoughts are on how social media has also maybe fueled kind of the continued partisanship or the continued divisiveness in our society, how maybe social media allows people to say things maybe more on the fringe than they would in person.
And you're absolutely correct about that, and it's really exacerbated by the fact that most of the dialogue is anonymous. We're not identifying who or knowing the person, much less identifying the person on the other side there. And so it becomes, the law of the jungle. And of course, then that hits the trigger again. You know, the anger, the fear; those are the things that get people motivated to react to what they're hearing. And add to this, it's all just happening so much faster. And it's why we need to have elected leaders who are able to be ahead of some of these dynamics. If you think how long it takes to pass legislation, significant legislation right now. That's a challenge if things were moving at a very slow, steady pace, but they're not, and they're moving much more rapidly. And if you're working on legislation here, by the time that's passed, it's well dated in terms of its potential impact. And so we need more people representing us at all levels that understand that dynamic and can put things in place that can help slow down the negative change that is evolving and put some things in place to try to protect the integrity of the democracy in the best way possible.
That's Lee Rosch from Leader Ethics Wisconsin here with us today to talk about the state of journalism ethics and how local citizens can be smart consumers of news. He's joined by Sam Shinta from I Am Education, a local education nonprofit focused on critical thinking, and Kathleen Bartson-Culver, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Kathleen, I wonder how also this pressure to kind of keep up with the pace of information may also be kind of contributing to problems in among news media organizations, you know, kind of that drive to keep things on social media or online.
Right. I think there is a real feed the beast problem happening right now, that you constantly have to turn out more and more information. And competition is, in my experience, rarely, if ever, good for ethical decision making. So when you are doing something to beat someone else, whether that is in an election or to the scoop on the front page of your news website, it can lead to some really, really problematic decision making. So I think those are certainly things that news media struggle with. I think news consumers struggle with how to put it all together, how to see the forest for the trees, when what's coming at you is breaking news alert or, you know, this little paragraph snippet on Twitter or that image that pops up on Facebook. How do you make sense of it all? You certainly see that right now with say, the Mueller investigation, for instance. We're getting, like, tiny little scoops here and there, and then all of a sudden the House Judiciary Committee has this, you know, massive request for information. How does a person make sense of what that means? Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that means, you know, encouraging citizens to think about things in the long term as opposed to just reacting in the short term. But I completely agree with Lee that we have had a lot of leadership that prompts us to respond with fear and anger in the moment rather than thinking about things in the longer term. And that is, in my experience, not relegated to one side or the other. It's a concern for both. And I would love to see more of my public leadership, not just within government, but within institutions overall, be saying more about that, about what it means to be a fear-based society. Anger has never been a good force in my life. I don't think it's a good force in public life. So I really value efforts like Lee's to get this conversation out there, to have us talking, because when you're over the back fence with someone who may vote very differently from you, you're not reacting with anger. You disagree, but you should be able to deliberate. You should be able to talk about that. And when you're doing it in person, that's much easier than if you're, you know, firing off a tweet.
You know, Kathleen, I wonder in all of this, you know, is there a difference between national media organizations and local media organizations? You said local news anchors, you know, tend to have the highest, you know, trust from the public. And, you know, I wonder if the public does discern between the two.
Yeah, we do see that in some of the research that the news sources you choose are the ones you trust more, and you trust local news, particularly local television news, more. That's actually something, though, that is very, very scary for me, because when you're talking about the loss, you know, almost a quarter of the workforce in journalism has been lost over the last two decades, it's almost entirely at the local news level. So I don't know the numbers from the La Crosse Tribune, but the size of that newsroom a decade ago to now would really blow your mind, that shrinking. And so to say the thing that citizens can rely on or trust the most is the thing that's under the greatest threat, that's a huge problem for us. There are some good efforts nationally to try to reinvigorate local news, to try to figure out that business model. And frankly, if citizens want to be well served, they have to pay for it. They're going to have to continue to visit the advertisers who support local television. They're going to have to consider subscriptions. But again, for a citizen, that's hard. You're telling me that the product is shrinking, but I should pay for it? That's a difficult decision for people.
Yeah, Sam.
Yeah, and just to that point, there's been some studies done recently that show that when communities lose their newspapers, their local newspapers, corruption in local government goes up. And so there is some correlation there between the people who are helping to ensure that level of transparency and honesty in local government. And as those local news organizations are being frittered away and you don't have the person showing up at the county board meeting, showing up at the city council meeting or the subcommittee meeting, that all of a sudden we see some corruption creep, not always major scandals, but little bit by little bit creeping in.
There's also some pretty good indications that polarization increases when local news decreases, and local news, not just the local news outlets, but local news consumption. So it allows us to drop into those online sources that only reinforce our worldview, and we become more and more set in that worldview, as opposed to going to the local news outlet and sharing that common base of information, which sometimes would challenge our worldview.
Lee, what are your thoughts on how local journalism plays an important part in kind of holding local leaders accountable?
Well, first of all, not every community is the same. And so local news and local journalists can help contribute to the culture and hopefully enhance the strength of, of that community's culture. I can say before I came to La Crosse, I lived in the Chicago area. And what you hear about Chicago politics, a lot of it's true. And yet the culture here is so much different. There's a much greater willingness to be collaborative here and so on. It wasn't always that way, but it certainly is today. And so those local dynamics are very important, and it's how the media covers things and organizations contribute in response to that and so on that helps build communities. Unfortunately, the national news might pick the bad example from that community and act as if it's blanketing the whole country. And so that's really where the damage can be very significant. So I do think it is going to require a grassroots effort, and it's going to be really by community by community. I mean, we have to have conversations that are in face-to-face settings, and to have this community's chapter in Leader Ethics Wisconsin is going to look different than the chapters that are going to evolve in some of the other communities in Wisconsin. And that's good because that reflects what each community is looking for.
Yes, Sam.
Yeah, if I could just add real briefly to what Lee said, too. When we look at the principles for ethical leadership and the core values that ethical political leaders have, the top two are transparency and honesty. And the idea that we will always rely on politicians to be transparent and honest is difficult. So the importance of the news media in helping to ensure that that transparency is being provided and that honesty is being, or the actions of our elected officials are being reported on so that we can say, are they truly being honest, is such an important check at that local level to just ensure that those two things are being kind of held out all the time.
Sam Shinta, UWL political science lecturer and president of the nonprofit I Am Education, is here with us today to talk about growing public distrust of news media. He's joined by Lee Roche from Leader Ethics Wisconsin and Kathleen Bartson-Culvert, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on how citizens can be smart consumers of information and what media organizations can do to re-inspire trust. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Public trust in news media appears to be at a new low, fueled by partisan politics and an uptick of false information perpetuated through social media. Leaders in the La Crosse area are asking how the rise of fake news is affecting our community, and they're hoping a recent event will start a conversation about journalism ethics and the future of news. Joining us today to talk about these issues are Kathleen Bartson-Culvert, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison and a recent speaker at UWL, Lee Roche, executive director of Leader Ethics Wisconsin, and Sam Shinta, UWL political science lecturer and president of I Am Education, a local education nonprofit focused on critical thinking. Kathleen, I wonder if you could talk a little bit about how this problem with distrust in news media got started. I mean, where did this all kind of form from?
Well, I think there's a strong case to be made that increasing political polarization caused part of this. I think particularly when you're looking at distrust among conservatives, I think there's a strong case to be made that the rise of talk radio on the right contributed. So lots and lots of challenge to mainstream news outlets and whether they could be trusted. I think that some very public scandals in news with plagiarism and fabrication of sources also contributed to that lack of trust. But as I mentioned earlier, this isn't just a problem for journalism. There's also, you know, increasing distrust of corporations, of government, of religious institutions. So there, this is not, we shouldn't look at journalism in a vacuum. We should think about what we are doing to both encourage people to trust in their civic institutions, but also make those institutions something worth trusting.
Yeah, Sam, I wonder how that is that idea is bleeding over into education. You know, are we seeing kind of distrust of even, could this bleed into distrust of textbooks or into the information that we're getting from teachers?
Absolutely. I don't think a week goes by these days where you don't hear some attack on either professors at the university level, where it happens most often, but also high school teachers, where they are basically being accused of trying to indoctrinate students, trying to only feed students certain party lines. That there's this level of distrust that, you know, it makes it really complicated to talk with students about a lot of current events, issues, social issues, because you always are wary of, oh gosh, am I betraying, you know, my side? Am I making sure that everything is very inclusive? And so when you start seeing that leaking in, distrust of teachers for sure. We are seeing some of that manifesting as well. Distrust of textbooks, certainly. The textbook process is a very business-oriented model, and so it is informed more by money and financial issues oftentimes than what the quality of those textbooks are. And we've seen battles in states like Texas in the recent decade where you have a state board that decides on what textbooks are in and out, which for textbook manufacturers is a multi-million dollar industry every year, making decisions. Well, if, you know, they're political decisions that are based on our divisive politics oftentimes. And so, well, if that story doesn't conform to the prevailing political thought in that particular state, well, then that textbook doesn't qualify. And so we have to find textbooks that maybe tell a different story. One of the ones that you hear over and over again is the battle over the Civil War and what the Civil War was fought about. And there are textbooks out there today that continue the idea that, well, the Civil War was really about states' rights, not about slavery. And as I tell my students all the time, well, yes, on one level, the Civil War is about states' rights, but it was about a particular state's right, that being slavery. The issue is that if students aren't getting that complete honest layout of information, that we are doing them that injustice of not developing good critical thinkers, that they cannot make informed decisions themselves because they're only seeing one slice of information and not developing that necessary empathetic thinking to what other points of view might be.
Lee, I wonder what your thoughts are on this, how distrust in media is really a much broader issue of distrust in institutions. Are you hearing from leaders either in the La Crosse area or in the state that are coming up against this?
Actually, we're getting some really good support from community leaders, people like Brian Rood, former state senator, who was a vice president with their own power cooperative, or Dave Scogan, CEO emeritus with Festival Foods, people who believe in character and applying those concepts to life as well as the political arena. But I think those concerns are coming because what people are seeing is an evolving playbook to get elected, and it's going in a direction that's very concerning. In some ways, honesty is not necessary to get people to vote for you, that they're politically tribalist interests are going to drive their vote, and you don't have to be honest. And that's really concerning because that's really eroding the core of the integrity of the American democracy. So when you have leaders speaking up and saying, wait a second, we've got to put something in place that restores the integrity of what we're doing. And we can have differences, and we will have differences, but we can have ways to try to move beyond those differences to accomplish some things if we have honesty, transparency, we try to be a unifying effect, and if we try to do the best we can to represent the entire constituency that we represent, not just the simple majority that voted for us. And that's really a key, to get that embraced by more and more elected leaders.
Kathleen, you mentioned how talk news might have played a role in kind of this rise in distrust. And, you know, I wonder if you could speak more on how maybe the line between traditional news, traditional journalism, and opinion, maybe how that's become blurred and contributed to this issue.
I think it's less about the blurring of the line between news and opinion and more about increasing reliance on opinion. In saying that I need the interpretation of that event from an entity that's going to reinforce what I already think, rather than looking at sort of a balanced, neutral account of that, let's say, policy debate. And so saying that because I have this emotional response to this content and I'm going to try to feed that emotional response, of course I'm going to go to those things that gin up my fear, gin up my anger. And that's where those become destructive forces.
Kathleen, how do you get people who are satisfied with the news organizations that they have and are satisfied with their sources of news? You know, how do you get them to kind of be invested in this idea of wanting a shared set of news and facts?
Yeah, that's actually a really fantastic question. And there is some evidence that actually, so the people who are sort of most polarized in their news consumption and most likely to fall victim to mis and disinformation are people 55 and older. And yet they're also the people who are most likely to share fact checks of information. Mm-hmm. So there's some sort of critical thinking mix there that I haven't quite figured out the keys to. I do think there's an extent to which if a person really only wants that, I don't know that you're ever going to solve that for that person. But if a person is hearing messages about transparency, honesty, integrity, moving away from fear and anger as drivers from someone that they support, like for instance, a political leader, that message could really go far. To have someone that you vote for say, it's important for us to not be dealing with issues in this way can be very, very powerful. I think that's why a lot of John McCain's rhetoric, for instance, really resonated with people, because there was this sense that he was putting honesty and integrity above that kind of partisanship. Now, I mean, that's not to say John McCain was not a consistent conservative. Of course he was. You know, when he ran for re-election, he was, I think, perhaps the most conservative voter in the Senate, his last re-election. But when he spoke in public, he spoke with that sense of a moral underpinning to what he was saying. And I think there can be some real power in that. And I think that people who might be inclined toward that worldview, they share those views with John McCain, would be receptive to that kind of talk from one of their leaders that they trust.
Lee, how do you get political figures to want to maybe be that voice of change in a world where, you know, we're seeing more people lean into partisanship?
Yeah. Well, we had a real good presentation by Brian Rood because he was talking about this issue of, you know, trying to overcome political tribalism. And I think there's a couple things that need to be done at a couple of different levels. One is that we have to help build an expectation that we expect you to be, as an elected leader, to be an ethical leader. And it needs to come from citizens, and it needs to come from citizens who vote. And ideally, it's a member of Leader Ethics Wisconsin is going to have lots of different reasons that are going to motivate them to vote for this person or that person. But among those reasons is a firm belief, a shared belief, that elected leaders should be ethical leaders. And so they might have other factors that are influencing how they, you know, where they vote on a particular thing, but that's really going to be a driver. As soon as elected leaders feel there are voters out there they will listen. Now, it's going to take time. And I think that when I talk about things at another level, we have to recognize that there are a lot of arrows that are going in the other direction right now. And so it is going to take persistence to try to constantly help people who feel that way to feel confident they can speak out or take some steps, write a letter to the media and see if they get something published. Get a question asked in a political debate about how are you going to represent your entire constituency if you're elected, not just the simple majority that vote for you. Lots of different things can come out, and once people feel more confident that they're asking the right questions and expecting the right things, I think we're going to see some elected leaders listen.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the rise of fake news and how it's affecting local communities. We're here with Lee Roche from Leader Ethics Wisconsin, Kathleen Bartson-Culver from the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison, and Sam Shinta from I Am Education, a local education nonprofit focused on critical thinking. Sam, if we don't see a shift away from where we're headed in regards to skepticism about news media organizations and broader organizations, broader institutions, what are the implications for our next generation?
I'm shuddering over here. That's a very, very dark world that you portray. We have to fix this problem. It is fundamental. If we continue going in the direction we are, where we are just so polarized, both in terms of our attitudes and in terms of how we value information, how are we going to talk with each other to find common ground and solutions? When we talk about critical thinking, what I explain to folks is critical thinking is both thinking deeply and then, as I mentioned before, having this sense of empathetic thinking, being able to recognize that on many issues there are two valid arguments that can be held on that particular point. If we become so polarized and we don't value or devalue other information sources such that we just want to silo ourselves in the things that we make us feel really comfortable, we're not going to be able to create that empathetic bridge to thinking. When we have empathetic thinking, we can have conversations with each other. When we can have conversations with each other, we can identify solutions to problems. And as Kathleen pointed out at the beginning of the show here, there are some big problems that we are looking at in our 21st century America here that we have to overcome. If we can't agree to have a basis of conversation where we can connect and communicate and be respectful of these ideas, but also recognize that we need to focus in that on some common quest for facts and understanding, then how are we going to solve these problems? And that's what really, really worries me. So to me, this is one of the imperatives of our society, is solving this very issue of restoring some of that trust in these institutions. And there's no doubt, as Kathleen pointed out, as I was pointing out earlier, there's no doubt that there are some players in these institutions that have created some of these problems, for sure. Are there educators that are biased and feed students biased information? Of course. Are there news people who have maybe overstepped the bounds over time? Absolutely. But we want to be careful not to paint a broad swath and say, well, therefore all educators are this or all journalists are this. Most of the teachers, most of the educators, most of our leaders, most of our journalists are outstanding people trying to do good work in the areas that we are. We need to get past this so that we can look long-term and solve some of these problems.
Kathleen, what are the implications from the current situation for the next generation of journalists specifically? You know, how is this situation maybe influencing those next reporters and anchors?
You know, it's interesting. In my classrooms, I'm not hearing much of students saying, well, nobody trusts us, so I'm not going to do this. I still hear the same thing I've heard for the last 20 years, which is I am committed to public service. And the best journalism is about public service. The worst journalism is about money. And so in my classes, I'm hearing it makes me optimistic. I'm very much glasses half full. I'm also optimistic that this next generation of citizens has been raised in this sort of you know, Wild West internet information sphere, and has gotten some education about how to deal with that. If this were a TV show, not a radio show, you would have seen earlier when Sam said that he had a library in his pocket with this supercomputer phone, and I just shook my head wildly no, because a library isn't what's in his pocket. What's in his pocket is all the information in the world. A library is a civic institution where information is curated and you have professionals who can help you. Mm-hmm. So if I think that there's a civic institution that we should all be investing in right now, I think it's libraries. Libraries in schools, libraries within communities. I don't know, a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, there was a thing posted online about should communities still fund libraries when, you know, Google makes everything accessible. And it was about the dumbest thing I had ever read. We need community investment in making our way through all of this information that's coming at us. You know, you want a sip of information and someone is putting a fire hose in your face, you need someone to help you. And I think educational institutions, civic groups like Lee's group and other entities like libraries can be very important for this next generation of journalists, but also of citizens.
If people are worried about the neutrality of their news sources or are worried that they're not getting good information, what can they do to make sure that they are being a smart consumer?
So one of the things that I recommend to people is we all have people in our lives who have different ideological bends than we do. And so I start by saying, have a conversation with someone who disagrees with you. Have a conversation and be, just as Sam said, empathetic in that conversation. Don't open the conversation to try to defend your point. Open the conversation to hear from that person. And then ask that person where she gets her information from. And then for a while, try out that information. So I do a very simple trick in my life. I set my, when you open a browser window, you can set what it opens to as the default homepage. And a couple of times a week, I change that to a different source. And sometimes I'll take on sources that really confront my kinds of beliefs, just so I see what's happening and I see the arguments that are going on there. It's a very simple step to diversify my sources. And then get out into your community. Go to the kinds of public talks that are hosted at a thing like a library or at a school, and be involved. And to the greatest extent possible, be involved with people who are different from you, not just ideologically, but in terms of their education, in terms of their religion, in terms of their race. Like, to the extent that we silo ourselves to other people who look and think just like us, we damage our communities.
Sam, what if people don't feel like they have the time or the energy to do some of these things, to be a smart consumer of news? You know, what if they say, well, I only have so many, you know, minutes to devote to getting the highlights, so, you know, I don't have time to sift through news organizations?
We have the time. We just choose not to make the time for this stuff. And that, to me, has always been the worst excuse that I hear. Well, I don't have the time to check up on the things that are going to be on the ballot this election, or I don't have time to look at my candidates. Look, this is an absolute essential to be a citizen in this country in the 21st century, to be able to take the time to grasp that understanding. It doesn't take a lot of time to do what Kathleen is talking about, to be a news omnivore. Just put a source to the side for a couple of days and read something else. To sit down and have a conversation with somebody where oftentimes those conversations are, as you say, we're starting off by defending our positions, and just be a listener. So just reorient some of the time that you're taking on other tasks to looking at these things a little bit differently. I would really challenge anybody that says they don't have the time to do it to show me your schedule. I will show you where you can find the minutes in the day to do this.
Yeah, Kathleen.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot of people, you know, we're using our time for things. And if people say, I have no time to do this thing you're telling me is important, my first question is, well, what have you been binge watching on Netflix lately? You know, so how many times have you rewatched the same sitcom? But I will say I am very empathetic to citizens that we saw in the 2016 election. who just want their problems solved. And really, my takeaway was that those were economic problems. So, you know, mm-hmm. you've worked for 20 years at a cheese factory in central Wisconsin, and it goes out of business, and there's no other industry in your area, but that's where you grew up, and that's where you're raising your kids, and now you don't know what you're going to do. Having me come along and say, diversify your news sources sounds pretty, I don't know, pretty privileged. Yeah. And I understand how difficult this can be for people. I don't want to understate that and say, well, everybody should be doing this. But I also think that's where ethical leadership comes in, to say, okay, I gotcha. I have got you. You are in a very scary situation. This is a really difficult time for you. And I am not going to callously use that fear and play to it for my own advantage, because that's where the problem really comes in. It is fine for people to be scared and to live their lives and trying to figure out how to do the best for their families. But to have someone try to turn that fear to their advantage, that's where I think we have a big issue.
Kathleen Bartson-Culver, director of the Center for Journalism Ethics at UW-Madison, joined us today to talk about the state of public trust in news media and the future of journalism ethics. It was the topic of a recent event held at UWL and sponsored by the nonpartisan nonprofit Leader Ethics Wisconsin. She's joined by Lee Roche, executive director of Leader Ethics Wisconsin, and Sam Shinta, UWL political science lecturer and president of IM Education, a local nonprofit focused on critical thinking. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.